Welcome back to the Unbox Some Fun Cast, the podcast about being on the front line of the games industry, recorded inside of Games Unlimited, a brick and mortar and online retail store here in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I'm one of your hosts, the owner of Games Unlimited, Kylie, and I'm joined today by my illustrious co-host, Chandra. How you doing, Chandra?
Doing all right. How about yourself?
Well,
given the date of recording, which is November 20th, I'd say we are getting ready to gear up for the big storm.
We are indeed, yeah. I think everyone on staff kind of feels it coming on. This is the quiet right before.
This kind of feels like the eye of the storm because we had Game Store Day, the first annual Game Store Day, on November 1. Of all times. There was a lot of frantic preparation for that, setting up events. We didn't know how it was going to go. And I definitely love to talk a little bit about that and how it went. But, you know, then it's like just coming off of that, we get maybe a week of a breather and then have to say, okay, we got to go into the next thing.
Yeah. And we had just done some Halloween stuff right before that. So, you know, it really was kind of a 1-2 punch. And then, as you say, just the tiny sliver of a breather. And we're right back in it for the holiday season, which, if all goes well, will be ridiculously busy.
A lot of times, if you're working for someone else, if you're working in, you know, a corporate job, and they're like, oh, it's crunch time, we got to get things done. It's like, ah, too busy. I need a day off. I don't want to do this. And for us, it's like, ah, we're crazy busy, but that means the money's rolling in. That means people are coming in. That means we're doing our job. It's tiring, but exciting and energizing and, you know, helps keep food on the table.
Yeah, it is the paradox. You want some slow days for yourself personally every now and again, but there's also this background anxiety when you have several slow days in a row that, oh God, has the shoe dropped? Are we dead? Which is irrational and absurd. But whenever you actually are concerned about the business as a business, and especially concerned about everyone else's paycheck, that irrational concern is kind of bound to arise.
That was something I did want to bring up, which is, what are our anxieties this time of year? And I suspect that yours and mine are different, given the different roles that we play at the store. Having one bad day, how does that affect you? What does it do? I know I talk to a lot of business owners, not just game store retailers, but other business owners, and they'll talk about having a profitable month. Right. So like looking at the month, I'll compare March's sales in 2025 to March's sales in 2024 to see if sales are going up, the overall, you know, rise, keeping up with inflation and things. But profitability is actually associated with, you know, sales minus expenses, but in particular, minus your cost of goods sold. And for us, that can vary greatly because we're not necessarily buying stuff and then selling through that particular inventory within a week, you know, within a time frame that makes looking at it monthly meaningful. We may have a very unprofitable March because we had the opportunity to buy a year's worth supply of some game that we're clearly not going to sell all of that in March. And then we may have a ridiculously profitable July because we didn't have to buy a lot of stuff. We were selling all the things that we had stocked up with earlier in the year. So for that reason, like, I try, not always successful, but I try to really look at things as a year. I'm looking at the profitability for the year. I want to compare 2025 as a whole to 2024, just because there are just so many things that are going to bleed over from day to day, week to week, month to month. One of the things that creates all this anxiety is that in a lot of businesses, small businesses, retail, and ours is no exception, the actual moving into profitability for the year doesn't happen until the holiday season. In fact, I've heard several apocryphal stories of the meaning of Black Friday. I haven't gotten a clear, Snopes.com. What's the actual, where does that term come from? But the one that I like is that businesses call Black Friday Black Friday because that is the day that they go in the black for the first time for the year. Meaning, when I look at the profit and loss statement, all the expenditures plus all the money coming in, there's a net positive. We're no longer in the red, we're in the black. That's always been true here at Games Unlimited. But that is a source of anxiety when you're looking at the big picture. Obviously, you can't run a business if you don't have the war chest to allow you to run in the red for most of the year, right? So at the end of 2024, I don't go, "Ooh, look at all that profit. Cool. I'm gonna go take it and buy myself a new car." Most of that profit stays in the bank account to be operating expenses for the following year, so that technically for the year starting January 1, we are in the red, but I've got the money to allow us to do that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's been interesting for me, and I know Dan, our other manager, really loves getting into the weeds with numbers. The more he and I have been looking at the numbers over the past several years now at the store, the more I think we are sharing your anxieties on that level of things. Although, at least for me, I can't speak for Dan on this, but those of us in the manager role who are a lot more front of store on a daily basis, a lot of what we're looking at is, we are experiencing foot traffic. We are experiencing number of transactions. We're experiencing interactions with customers. How many customers are we individually speaking with in a day and helping to guide around the store in a day? On any given day, how many people did I interact with? Gives me a little bit of a sense of what the level of excitement is for holiday shopping. How many people come in and tell me, "Oh, I'm doing Christmas shopping, I'm picking up Hanukkah gifts." So a lot of the time, that's my focus. And that doesn't change really month to month or season to season for me. Obviously, I want to see a lot more people in starting around Thanksgiving and going straight through Christmas and New Year's. But the whole year long, that's what I have my eye on to kind of judge a day or a week. Because that's the other thing, right? You talk about looking at months and you talk about looking at years when you're looking at numbers. When you're talking about on the ground, front of store experience, looking at numbers is less useful because you might have a day that looks slow in isolation, but you still helped a lot of people that day. And then the following day, you might do three massive transactions that make up the sales for the whole day, but you don't feel like you did much. So it's a very different lens, I think. In the holiday season, of course, we tend to see those two things line up. We tend to see them merge back together for a month and a half or so, where suddenly we have huge foot traffic. We have a ton of people walking into the store that we're helping out all day, every day for that month and a half. And then if you look at the numbers coincide with what you expect to see from having that many people in the store, because most people in the store are making larger transactions than they might be apt to make the rest of the year. So I don't know if that even really answers the question. It's just more having to balance these two things in your head during this season when the rest of the year you can get by looking at one or the other of them.
That does lead me to a question for you in particular. Our online sales have exploded on the backs of really the social media that we've done. And this has been a long push. This has been a 2-year project of basically saying, "Hey, let's go deep on TikTok and stuff and show people what the store is like," because we believe there's an audience out there of people who don't want to buy games from Amazon and deep discounters and will buy from us even though it's full price because they get to feel like they're part of the store. I ran the numbers recently and saw that our in-store sales are the large bulk of our sales. Probably 90% of our sales are in store and 10% online. But that even that split is a huge increase. And what I saw is that we've seen about an 8% increase in sales in store this year, but a 70% increase in online sales. And Chandra, you spend a lot of time down in the shipping mines, as we call them, doing those online sales. I spend a bit of time myself, but particularly for you as someone who's on the floor and experiences how the store is doing, kind of, holistically and checking people out, but also talking to people. You see numbers, but you also have that interaction. How do the online sales feel to you when you're down there, spending 2 hours shipping stuff? Does that feel like success?
For as much as we make the joke of, oh, I'm going down into the shipping mines again, it definitely does feel like success, but it's an unexpected kind of success. You know, at the top of the show, you said we are a brick and mortar and online retailer, and I think that's the first time you've introduced us that way. And it's odd to hear, but it's also increasingly true. I remember years ago, we always used to emphasize how much we are a brick and mortar retailer, full stop. And then COVID happened, and we had to quickly pivot to be able to continue to do business at all. And most of that was just for our local customers to be able to come pick things up from us. You know, we had curbside pickup for a while there. We still do a lot of that. A lot of our online sales are still people ordering online for their own convenience so that they can come in and pick up the game at their leisure, but they have bought and paid for it and they know it is in a bag waiting for them and no one else can snag it off the shelves before they get there. But the shipping element is what really has exploded. The question, does that feel like success? Yes, it does. And a big part of that is the social media side of it, where you can tell. You and I were just looking at an example of this the other day. You can tell when someone's shipping order has been at least partly inspired by a video we recently put out. And it's cool that they're buying the thing from us, but for me, what's even cooler is knowing that people are actually watching our stuff and that they're enjoying it to the point where it's influencing the games they're interested in picking up. It's really cool to be able to see that in real time. Put out a video, a day or two later, we get a couple orders for things we covered in that video, and we can see the direct through line and know that, much like getting a comment or a bucket full of likes on the video, this is another way for people to show engagement. And I think it speaks to our overall philosophy with our social media and with our online presence in general, that we are trying to be a friendly local game store at a distance for people who have a need for that. You watch our videos, and that's us. Like, yeah, sometimes we play things up a little bit, but really that is us. We don't script them out. We just say, okay, these are three things I want to talk about in this video. How are we going to start it? Okay, great, let's go. And then it's just us on camera. And I think people feel that. I think people get the sense that if I'm excited about something, excited enough to make an idiot out of myself on a video that I know is going on the internet, then that's probably a pretty good game, or at least it's interesting enough that they want to take a chance on it.
There's a certain connotation of an online game store, and that connotation is deep discounter, kind of faceless, moving in volume. But there are other types. I can allow myself to say, yes, we are also an online store because, Frankly, we're an online store with a personality. Even if we're selling online and marketing things online, the fact that we're also day in and day out dealing with physical people in a physical location is going to change our energy and going to change our aura. And frankly, going to change the things that we sell and the products we're excited about. I can't imagine if we were purely online, obviously we're going to look and say, oh, this is hot, let's bring that in and sell it. Maybe we play it with our friends and family and are excited about it. But there's something about introducing a game to people here in the store and seeing if that excitement still holds that's really going to tell us, yes, this is a game we want to push. We're pushing it not just because we know it's already got some marketing bits behind it and people are just going to come to us and buy it as cheap as possible. It's actually fun and it's good. And we've experienced that with strangers who didn't know what the game was until we showed it to them. Speaking of making an idiot of ourselves, do you want to tell the people how Gamester Day went?
So I don't usually work Saturdays, but I came in I came in for a little bit just to be present there, soak in the energy a little bit, and also see how things seem to be going business-wise. And I have to say, I came in pretty early in the day, and I was already pretty impressed with the energy I saw in the store. Compared to the photos that I saw from later in the day, where it was a veritable sea of humanity filling up a significant portion of the store. So, on the level of participation, on the level of people coming in and people getting excited and people having a good time, my read on it is that it was quite a good success. I'll let you talk about the numbers themselves because I think, we talked about our expectations for Game Store Day going in, and you and I were looking through very different lenses right from the start, which I think is a good thing. You need different people to be keeping an eye on different aspects of a thing because I think you also need to have different points of view of what makes an event a good event versus an unsuccessful one. It can be a good event through one lens and a total flop through another lens, and both of those can be true. You just have to take both of them into account moving into the future when you're thinking about a similar kind of event. On the level, again, of just pure excitement, of people being there, people getting into it, people feeling part of the store, I think it went really well. We had people for a couple weeks now afterwards saying they had a really good time. We got some, we got some constructive criticism on a few things as well, which is great. I like that our customers feel like they can bring those things to us because then we can say, okay, yeah, lesson learned. How can we do that better next time? And that's way better than having a customer base who doesn't feel like they can bring these things to us and just says, well, I'm just not going to go again. I'm not going to do that again. I think we did a really good job of it for the first annual Game Store Day. And we also took away a number of lessons to make anything of that sort even better and even more fun in the future. So, what do you think about the numbers part?
Going in, I think we talked about this in the episode leading up to it about events. I was cautiously, sort of conservatively looking to say, from a numbers perspective, this will be successful if we do double a normal Saturday. And we hit double, we hit just a little over double. So running purely the numbers, I thought, what was our cost to put this on? We gave away a lot of stuff during the raffle. We opened up some games to do the tournaments with, and we gave away some games during the tournaments, but a lot of it was raffle tickets. And we gave about as much stuff away in the raffle as it costs us to buy the three boxes we give away during Free RPG Day. So I was able to kind of set the metrics on that. That's how much we spent. How much extra did we do? Now, Free RPG Day, we really do maybe 40 to 50% above a general Saturday in June. which is actually phenomenal considering that RPGs themselves, as a slice of our overall sales, they're probably 15% at this point. It's definitely the second largest category outside of board games for us. So now, Game Store Day had a lot more payroll costs. We had many more people on staff than we do for Free RPG Day. But, overall, still highly profitable. Definitely worth doing from a monetary perspective, assuming the prep and stress and anxiety are commensurate with that. Which, while there was a lot of that, as you said, Chandra, we've done it now. We've got a flow. Obviously we can make changes, but we know how to do it. We could pull this off again in the future and have reasonable expectations of what it was going to look like, because that was a big part of it for us. We had no idea what it was going to look like. It's worth the work we put into it. It's worth the stuff we give away, even if it wasn't drawing excitement and all of the other things, which it was, and I was there the whole day. I lost my voice running massive multiplayer hot streak and things like that. But it did create so much excitement. So many people, the winner of our Toy Battle tournament had never played Toy Battle before that day. And that's a thing I love too. I don't like hyper competitive type of board game thing. So saying, hey, we're going to do this little game that is so easy we can teach you right before you play and just go in and do something like that. Tons of fun. I know we talked about it in our wrap-up management meeting. Would we do this again next year? Do we want to do it on our own? This was technically sponsored by Gamma, but we did all the work. Not to disparage Gamma per se, but really it was like, what were they providing? And we came to the conclusion, no, we could do this on our own and it's not going to affect things. Certainly hope Gamma continues to do it, gets more marketing behind it, makes it a thing that people will find us because they know there's this big thing happening. But if we want to do this again in the spring, beginning of summer, we can do it. And if Gamma does it again in the fall, maybe we do it twice a year.
Why not, honestly? I think it was fun enough for people and the employees too. That's another thing is I hear from staff that they love days when it's all hands on deck because a lot of us don't get to work with each other very much except for occasional fill-in shifts that make us overlap. Someone calls off, I've got to fill in on a weekend, and hey, now I get to work with Gwen, or whatever it is. So those days when we all get to come in, or at least a bigger chunk of us than usual get to come in and interact with each other and interact with customers together in a way that we don't normally get to do, I think people on staff really love that. That sets the day apart. It has more of a party atmosphere, even though we're all, quote unquote, at work. It still makes it feel very festive. And I think that's one of the things that, for as much as we all kind of dread going into the holiday season because we know we're going to be exhausted, we also look forward to it at the same time for that very reason that it does have a festive feeling to it throughout because, yeah, you get some people who are kind of being jerks because they're stressed out about their last minute shopping, but by and large, most of the people in the store are excited. Most of the people in the store are excited for the upcoming holiday, whatever their upcoming holiday is, to spend time with their family, and they're excited about the games they're buying to play with their family over the holidays, because even the games you're giving to someone else, if you're doing it in person, there's like a 50-50 shot that game is being ripped open and played day of. And I think all of that goes into the shopping experience in our industry, perhaps uniquely. This is not an industry like going to Toys R Us would have been in the 90s and 2000s, where you're getting into brawls and foot races to try to get to the pile of whatever hot toy there is, or to get one of the 100 limited copies of the new video game that just came out, or whatever. This is people coming in to explore, even right up to Christmas Day. People are coming in and saying, hey, show me what's really cool. that I can present to my family, which I think is just a way different atmosphere than people busting doors to try to get the one thing that they already know is hot and in demand.
I see my job as marketing. Obviously, there's behind the scenes stuff, there's bookkeeping, there's things like that. There's 30,000 foot view things. But a lot of what I do is how do I get people in the door? And then I see the staff, their job is to sell the people that come into the door something, right? But for me, the anxiety I feel going into Q4 is, have I marketed enough? And the problem with marketing of all types is it is so incredibly hard to track return on investment. You throw money or ideas or things at the wall, and you can't even tell if it sticks. You're just throwing it at the wall and then looking weeks later and saying, hey, we sold stuff. We focus on things like views, social media views and reach, because, well, that's a metric we can see. Does it actually turn into anything at the end of the day? I don't know. I was mentioning during our management meeting yesterday, I had just posted a social media video about stocking stuffers. And I had said, Agent Avenue, great stocking stuffer this year. It's been less than 24 hours since I've posted that video, and we've sold 8 copies of that game, right? Doesn't have a great amount of views or anything, but clearly it's turning into stuff. But it's rare to have that kind of direct thing. So what's keeping me up at night is just, should I be posting another video? Do I need to be putting more signs out? How do I get the word out that this is what we're doing? And I feel this way every single year. It's always, are people going to know about it? Are they not going to show up this time? And I've been doing this for 15 years. They show up every time. But that doesn't actually help assuage the anxieties.
That kind of brings my head around to the elephant in the room. This year is a bit different. My anxiety levels have been higher all year long, and that has, frankly, all to do with tariffs, with the economy in general. We are somewhat fortunate to live in one of the states of the union here in Pennsylvania that has been hit a bit more softly than a lot of other places, but people here still feel it. And from our position here in this particular business, the numbers look pretty darn good right now heading into the holidays, but whenever you have so much economic uncertainty, whenever you have so many factors hitting the pocketbooks and bank accounts of families, there's always that thing in your head that says, when is the train gonna stop? Numbers look great for us right now, but there's this little voice in the back of my head that is wondering, does it die down for the holidays? Do people decide to cut back for the holidays this year? And maybe they do, maybe they don't. This is not a point of certainty for me, and that's where the anxiety comes from. If it were a point of certainty, we could say, okay, well then we plan differently and mitigate it somewhat. But because we have no idea what's actually coming down the pike, all we can do is plan the way we would plan for any other holiday season with similar looking numbers heading into it. And hope that it works out for us.
And that's the thing too. That's what feeds into my own anxieties. If the economic uncertainty makes people buy less this holiday season, and so we do less, maybe December is actually down from last year December. I don't know whether that's the economy or I didn't market well enough, or I didn't do all these other things. You do get a better sense if you talk to the other businesses nearby you, talk to other retail stores, other game store retailers, and see what their general trends are. That can help you figure out. But yeah, a lot of being in business is not knowing what is actually due to you and what you've done, good or bad, and what's just going to happen anyway. I know several game stores who have already surpassed their 2024 numbers. Now, a large part of that has to do with these are stores that heavily do collectible card games, and the collectible card game scene this year has been nuts. High profile releases of Magic products, Pokemon products, and that just do ridiculously better than anyone anticipated, right? And those can't be accounted for. I mean, if I don't know what it's like to run a store that does a significant amount of business in CCGs, but I know there is a lot of, okay, what's coming? What's the next Magic release? Do we anticipate it's going to be good or bad? How does that all come out in the wash? When I'm looking at a year in my store, I feel like that year has a lot to do with what we did, what we chose to bring in, etc. If a significant portion of your business actually has to do with a product that someone else is making, whether, say, Wizards of the Coast knocked one out of the park this year or published a whole bunch of Fallen Empires, you can't control for that, right? And that's part of why stores say we got to diversify, we got to do other things. But it does sound like for a lot of game stores, this year is a banner year on the backs of a lot of releases like that. And that's great. That's one of those things that's going to pad you if the holidays end up not being great for whatever reason. But I'm with you, Chandra. I don't know. I worry that this year has been so good, and particularly this past month has been so good because people are buying early. It's great they're buying early, but that means when I look at December and say, well, December should do this, maybe it's going to do less because those sales already happened. We just don't know.
Who knows until it happens? And that's always the greatest anxiety. It's a less horror story ready version of the fear of the unknown. We're going to feel this every single year for as long as we're around. That's the fact of it, regardless of what, extraneous political and economic stuff is going on.
Yep, every single year, every single year. Given that we are about to hit the busy season, we don't really have room in our schedule to continue to record the Unbox Some Funcast. As much fun as it is for us, we got to focus our efforts elsewhere. So this is going to be our final episode of season one. We will be back. But we figured, this is a good time to stop. This episode's going to post just before Thanksgiving, and then we're into December. So hoping to come back, maybe in January. We'll see how we're feeling. But we do have a lot of cool ideas of shows that we want to do next season on the Unbox Some Funcast. What are some of the things you're excited to talk about next year, Chandra?
I'm actually really excited to go over how the holiday season went, truly, because that's something we do every year privately. But I think that's a fun thing to get to share with the world because we talk about being on the front lines of the games industry, and we have spoken in the past about what that means to us and why we do this podcast in the first place. And I think debriefing after the holiday season will be a huge, huge bullet point for us as far as fulfilling that mission, giving people a real inside view. And I actually think that's going to be fun no matter what happens, to be able to break it down for everyone and say, here's what went well, here's what went not so well, here's why we think it went that way. We are going to try to have more guests. And that's something I want listeners to know about because, hey, if you know someone that you think would be a really great guest for us, by all means, shout them out, get them in touch. We would love to speak with other retailers who have very different experience from ours. We would love to speak with publishers, maybe some designers. I think that is going to be a really cool thing we have on the docket, getting different angles and viewpoints on the industry and on the retail side of the industry. How do publishers and designers look at us retailers? We want to find that out. We also want you, the listener, to find that out along with us because that's education. That's a fun conversation to have.
We want to find out where we're wrong in how
Oh,
we
yeah.
think publishers are doing things. You know,
Absolutely.
Last episode, I talked about my experience at cons, and I have assumptions about how publishers view cons and selling there. But, you know, till we can get stuff straight from the horse's mouth, yeah. No, yeah, I already have several publishers that I've spoken to that are like, yep, would love to come on and have a chat. Retailers too. And particularly, you know, since this is about the front line, about retail stores, I think having a lot of different types of retailers on will be good, and hearing what their experience is like, how it differs from ours. We're just one perspective, really diving into what crowdfunding means for a game store will be a great episode. And actually one I'm excited on, you know, I can start pulling the numbers on this once 2025 is wrapped up. Taking a real deep dive on where every penny of a game sale actually goes, right? You buy a $60 game from Games Unlimited. Well, how much of that money went to paying the publisher or distributor for that game? How much of that money went to the electricity for the building and the rent? How much of that went to payroll? How, you know, there's so many different things that get broken down, just to really see this is where all that money actually goes and how much ends up as profit. That's, I think, going to be super fascinating. I haven't done that exercise in a long time, so I'm looking forward to that. So lots of stuff, but you know, this will be the last one for this year. But before we go, I definitely want to do, you know, games we've been playing. But quick hits, Chandra, what are the things that you are going to find yourself recommending frequently in the month of December as people come in?
There are actually a lot, and I've been on a big, fast kind of family game kind of kick lately, but I know I've mentioned it before, but Person Do Thing is going to be a big one for me. I just can't recommend that game enough as a party game. Origin Story, I enjoy a lot. I want to play more Origin Story myself, but I want to get that on more tables. Agent Avenue, which I know you have been excited about for a while now, but I only just got to learn it and play it. And that's been in constant rotation on our demo bar ever since. Just me and Dan, me and Kristen, a few of our regulars, just in constant rotation. So I guess those three, honorable mention to Enthrone, which I can't get enough of.
Yeah. And they all hit a different, you know, like in Throne, you're going to recommend to someone, hey, do you like chess-like games? That's an easy pick for that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm largely the same. Obviously, going to continue to recommend Hot Streak. That just mm-hmm. for your family gathering, that's going to be fantastic. Hopefully, we get Magical Athlete back in. I don't know if that's going to happen or not. Yeah. What am I really going to be drawn to? I think...
Oh, Food Fight.
Food Fight. Yep, it's a great one.
Food Fight. Gotta throw Food Fight.
I mean, honestly, that whole Magenta line, I don't know if that speaks to more of the collector's mentality, but I love to be able to say, hey, there's this line of games. That happened actually yesterday. A customer had come in and said they really have been having fun with Figment for a youth group, actually. And I said, well, you're already into that line. Let me show you some other games in that line. Of course, they picked up Food Fight. So I like having that to really focus on.
And then RPGs, I you know, I think Daggerheart is going to continue to do really well. I think that'll be a great holiday seller. That is a very good package, I have to say. Darrington Press put together an excellent package. The price point on it is, what, around $60?
Yep.
So it's already only $10 more than a single one of the three D&D books you need to play that friggin' game. But you have your whole core rule set in there. You have cards in this very nice sort of slipcase style box set. That's such a good package for an RPG, for a nice big budget, full color hardcover RPG. So even if it's, you know, I haven't played it yet myself, but I have to say, it's one of the first, like, huge name RPGs to come out in a while. I'm actually interested in trying over and against my usual small press indie fare, you know?
Yeah, and I will say, I have grown to really appreciate cards, spell cards, and action cards in an RPG. Playing D&D with my family, with my kids, from the time they were really like 7 and 9, it's super helpful for them to just have cards and say, like, what can you do? Look, you are a druid and you have these three spells. Because that open-ended nature of, hey, do whatever you want. And they're like, well, what spells can I do? Just being able to look down at a card and say, I have this. And yes, here's all the technical parts of what it could do. But just having a visual, like, oh, yes, grasping vines. Well, what do you want? Tell me what you want to do with that. I'll come up with the mechanics behind it, just to give you a lead-off point. And so that the fact that Daggerheart comes with that already, it's not a separate add-on purchase, I think really makes getting into something like that a lot easier. We should talk about a game we've loved that we've been playing. I'm gonna let you go first this time, but I don't think I'm gonna grab whatever game you're gonna talk about anyway. And I doubt you're gonna talk about mine.
I'm sure I won't talk about yours, but I am gonna talk. I know I already mentioned the thing, but I have to say Agent Avenue. It is so clever. It is so clever, everyone. This is a game. It has a simple mode and an advanced mode. The advanced mode adds in special rule-breaking powers. But I gotta tell you, I love the basic mode. I think the basic game without those special abilities is such an elegant skill-based game where the person who wins that game is straight up the person who was better able to adapt on the fly and who was better able to read their opponent and force their opponent's hand. It is pure skill, that game. Plays super fast. I mean, that is a 5-minute game once you know how it plays. It's the kind of game you're gonna play over and over and over again in a sitting. I can't speak highly enough of it. Just an amazing little two-player game where your tactics matter every single time.
I'll be real quick. Yomi 2 came out. Anyone who knows me knows that I have a deep history with Yomi. This is a fighting, basically Street Fighter, the card game. There have been Street Fighter, the card games officially in the past, but Yomi was like the first. I'm an old school fighting game fan who no longer has the manual dexterity to keep up with what's really going on in the scene, and was never had the patience to like really practice hard enough to be a high level tournament player. But the idea behind a fighting game in a card game form that's just reading the opponent, building up combos. Yomi itself uses a very basic rock, paper, scissors approach. Both players are going to play a card face down. It's either an attack or a block or a throw. Attacks beat throws, blocks beat attacks, throws beat blocks. Depending on your character, you have different combo possibilities. Anyway, Yomi goes back almost 15 years. I loved it then. Other fighting game card games have come out. Guilty Gear being the one I think is like chef's kiss to Guilty Gear once you get into that one. But Serlin has put out Yomi 2. Massive overhaul to the game. I'm absolutely loving it. Can't wait to play more.
It looks totally different. Totally
It
different.
really is. And it's one of those games you can look at, when you know the first one and you know the history behind it, you can look at it and say, I see where they fixed problems or where they saw where there were small points where your decision space was less than it needs to be. Let's overhaul the game to change that. Not just make minor tweaks. It's like once we can go back to the drawing board and say everything is on the table to change, they were able to do that. And it's super cool. We've just got 10 characters so far. There's another 10 characters coming out next year. Yeah. Never been a commercial success, I will say. And I don't think this is going to be a commercial success for us, but we've all got our passion projects, and I'll definitely keep a copy of the starter set for Yomi behind the demo bar. And anyone that expresses interest, I'm going to step up and say, hey, let's play this game. All right. That'll do it for us for the first season of the Unbox Some Funcast. Really appreciate you all listening and getting some insight on the front lines of the games industry. You can always write to us, sales@gamesunl.com. Join our Discord if you go to our website, gamesunl.com. There's links to our Discord. We've got an entire channel devoted to the Unbox Some Funcast. We'd love to get your questions, get your comments, continue the conversation there. Until then, we will try to survive Q4 as best we can.
See you in the new year, everyone.
Yep. See you in the new year. Take care. Go unbox some fun.